So you shared one of your signature drinks with me. I'm gonna share a little drink with you. Now I gotta warn you, it's a little strong.
I can handle it.
Might sprout some hair on your chest. It's Remy 1738.
Okay.
When you pour it, you never pour more than 2 finger lengths.
Okay. All right. Let's try this out.
All right, now I'm gonna wait for the expression on your face.
Okay.
Cheers.
Strong, but pretty good. Smooth.
Okay. Now let's talk.
Okay, you know, we're relaxing by the pool, but I think I want to get a little more personal and a little deeper.
Okay.
I am an avid fan of the podcast, I'm not going to lie. Oh. I listen to the KC Crew faithfully every week.
Oh.
But the first episode I listened to was actually about your face being slashed when you were a teen.
Yes.
And what I took from that episode was that you learn to never base your self-esteem and who you are off of your physical appearance.
Right.
Can you elaborate a little bit on that? Because for those that haven't heard that podcast.
Yes. Well, when I was 15, long story short, because it is a long detailed story, I was on my way home from school and my girlfriend and I stopped in a McDonald's. And when we walked in, there was a group of girls sitting there. And as I was going through my bag looking for money to buy our food, I started to hear comments that they were making and they were directing it towards me. It was something that I was roughly familiar with. I grew up in Brooklyn and it was just something that I encountered time to time. But I was in a little bit of disbelief because we literally walked in. I didn't make eye contact with them or anything. And all of the comments that were being made were about my skin complexion or just about my look in general. And I said to my girlfriend, "Do you think they're talking about me?" And she said, "They have to be, because you're the only person here that fits what they're saying." So I said, "You know what, let's just get our food and get out of here." And by the time I got the money out of my bag, those comments turned into direct verbal assaults. And it caused a big commotion inside McDonald's and the security guards asked us to leave. So we walked out. We were actually kicked out, that group and me and my girlfriend. And once we got outside, it started a whole huge uproar outside. They were calling me names, yelling and screaming, threatening me and things of that nature. The police were called. They came and told us to go our separate ways. And I was like, thank God, you know, the police came. And it was in a very busy area. It was on Jamaica Avenue in Queens, if you know anything about Queens. Anybody from Queens knows that area. And we went our separate way. We thought they did too. But as soon as the police left, they came back and they followed us. Again, racial epithets, light-skinned jokes. They called me things like, "You piss-colored bitch, you think you're all that." And I'm thinking to myself, how could you even make that judgment of me when I didn't even make eye contact with you? But it was just something that might have been assumed. And at the time, slashings were very prevalent in Brooklyn and in Queens. Girls were walking around with razor blades. Guys were walking around with razor blades. I remember seeing people practice having a razor blade in their mouth, in between their teeth and their cheeks, and spitting it out and catching it in between their fingers, and in one motion, catching it and then coming down to slash someone's face. It was a thing for years. And I was always mindful of it. And my mother would say to me, "Be careful if you're ever on public transportation or anything. Keep your head down, because one day I don't want someone to slash your face." And it had been something that she had told me quite a few times before. She had said it to me in front of my girlfriend, who just happened to be with me that day. That was like my best friend. She was like my sister when I was in high school. And that day it all kind of came to a head. So now there was an argument and a whole crowd ensued. And we were being watched like spectacles. And that was the first point that I started to feel real fear.
Like you were unsafe.
I felt unsafe, and it was two of us, and it was five of them plus two boys.
Okay.
And I wasn't engaging in the back and forth, and at one point I just became still, and I was watching, because now I felt, I knew that I was about to be jumped. And I saw the girl that kind of positioned herself as the leader reach in her pocket and then pull her hand out. And she was the loudest, and all of a sudden she became the most quiet. So then she looked very suspicious to me. Next thing I know, she ran up to us. She grabbed my girlfriend by the hair, pulled her, her head flicked back, and then she began to fall to the ground. And as that happened, that's when I saw the razor blade. So as she was falling, I grabbed her and I threw her off of my girlfriend. And as she was falling and my girlfriend was falling, the razor blade just nicked my girlfriend's hand. So she has a little scar from that still. As soon as that happened, all of her friends jumped on me.
Oh, wow.
So I was being kicked in the face, hit, stomped. My face was stomped. And as it's happening, it's like I was falling to the ground, but then you stumble back up. And then I would fall to the ground, and then you try to stumble back up. And the strange thing is that I don't know if anybody listening now has ever been in a fight, but I'd been in a few fights growing up.
Because that's surprising.
I'd been in a few fights growing up just because of similar type of things. I went to a Catholic school in a predominantly white neighborhood, but I lived in a predominantly black neighborhood, and the cultures are just different. It's just different, you know what I mean? In the white neighborhoods, they didn't have to worry about slashing and taking public transportation because most of their parents had cars and things like that. My parents had cars, but I always wanted to take the bus with my friends and things like that. So I would go through more dangerous neighborhoods to get to my school. So it's just something that I encountered, but it was a way of life and it was something that I understood. So it was like, whatever. So then during the fight, I heard someone in the background say, "Oh my God, there's blood." And what I was saying before is when you're in a fight, like you don't, well, at least for me, my experience has been that you don't feel the pain. I felt the pressure. I knew I was being punched. I knew I was being kicked. I knew I was being stomped, but I didn't feel the pain. It wasn't as traumatic as someone would imagine during the actual confrontation.
So now you see blood.
So when someone said that there was blood, I was thinking,
whose blood is it?
Whose blood, what's happening?
Right.
And then next thing I know, people in the crowd were starting to pull us apart. So one of her friends grabbed me and pulled me, and a dollar van driver grabbed her. So now I remember looking at her across from me, and she broke free and ran up to me again, and I thought that she punched me in the face one last time. And then they all ran. She ran, her friends ran, people in the crowd ran, people that had nothing to do with it were running. It was almost like a stampede. It was massive amount of people running. And I just remember, I could feel it now because I remember it like it was yesterday.
Really?
I remember looking at my girlfriend because I had no idea I'd been slashed. I said to her, "Oh my God, we made it through this, okay. Like, we're alive.
We're fine."
And she looked at me and she was just like, "Oh my God, Gia, your face." And she just fell to the floor and was sobbing. And then I looked down and I had on my brother's leather jacket. I had on my uniform skirt, and my leather jacket was all slashed up. My uniform skirt had slashes through it. One of the slashes on my skirt went through my skirt and hit my leg. I had no idea. And then I see all of this blood. And then I touch my face and I saw blood on my hand. And then it was as though everything went blurry. Because then I knew that it had to be a dream. Because my mother had just said something to me about it maybe 2 weeks prior. So I knew it was a dream. So I physically pinched myself over and over again. And I was thinking, that dream stuff that they say doesn't friggin' work. Because clearly I'm dreaming. And when I realized I wasn't dreaming, there was a fence. It began to snow. It was the day before Thanksgiving that year, 1994. And I was 15 at the time. It was about maybe a month, September, October, November, no, 2 months after I just started dating Rashawn. So it was just started snowing, and I sat on the floor that was covered in like a light haze of snow. And I was just watching everything that was going on around me. The police coming, police cars pulling up, people still running, people that were there that didn't run still talking.
Now, how bad was the slash?
So, when I used to hear about slashings before I got slashed, you think it's a fine razor blade. You get a slash, it's the dimension of a razor blade.
Right.
You don't think that it looks any different. Mm-hmm. But that's not what happens. My entire face opened up. And it was so deep and it was so harsh that it almost went completely through my cheek. So even right now, if I take my tongue and run it on the inside of my cheek, I can still feel like a bit of scar tissue inside. That's how deep it was. So the second time, during the fight, she got me this little one.
Okay.
But when she came up to me the second time, there was no interference. And that was this long one.
Now, a few years later, you got it fixed, correct?
Right. So like I said, at the time, slashing was like a big thing.
Uh-huh.
So I had seen talk shows with slash victims. And then Sally Jesse Raphael, which was a talk show at the time, reached out to me. Montel Williams reached out to me. And Geraldo reached out to me. We decided to do the Geraldo show.
Okay.
So I went as a guest and he interviewed me about what happened and talked about the issues, etc. And in true talk show style, he offered the services of a plastic surgeon to correct the scar. Because what had happened was it keloided.
Oh, okay.
And for those that don't know, it's the overhealing of a scar. So it wasn't as nice and flat and flush as it is right now. It was like having like a mini finger on my face. But I was okay with it. I never planned on having any type of surgery to correct mm-hmm. the scar. But then when it was offered, it was something that I considered. And I said, okay. So then I had it done. And all they did was take a laser. They put me under. They excised the scar, which means that they removed it. Mm-hmm. And then they re-sutured it the way that it should have been sutured in the first place. Because I had a hack job done. I was stitched up by emergency room, right. Doctors. They weren't plastic surgeons. It wasn't their specialty.
They just need to make sure you didn't die.
They just wanted
out.
To stop right. the bleeding.
Right.
And it didn't heal very nicely as a result of it.
You have 5 kids. How many of them are girls?
3 girls.
3 girls.
Yes.
Do you fear or worry that they may go through the same type of thing? Maybe not necessarily slashing, but just being tormented for the complexion of their skin or just being pretty?
No, because we don't live in that type of area. That's
okay.
not something that's prevalent where we live. But what they do encounter is, and on a very rare basis, but they have encountered racism, but not for being fair or being quote unquote pretty or mm-hmm. attractive, mm-hmm. but for being black.
Okay.
So my mother's mother is half Chinese, half Jamaican. My mother's father is Scottish. So my mom is black, white, and Chinese. And my father is Puerto Rican. And my husband is black. He looks like he might be a little Spanish, but he's not. He's 100% black. So we have black children. Mm-hmm. And I consider myself black. That mm-hmm. is what I identify myself with. So to have black children who identify themselves as black and living in a predominantly Caucasian town, I've experienced small things where I've had to teach my children how to deal with being different or to deal with racism, especially my son, because boys are a lot more forward mm-hmm. about racism mm-hmm. and they'll come out of their skin a little bit more to insult someone. And there's been times where I've seen different treatment of my son, and that's just the truth.
You know, with having 5 children and each one of them go through their own issues, whether it be, you know, a friend doesn't like me or a racist issue or any of the sort, how do you find the time to equally be just as good of a mom to each one of them?
You know, I get asked that a lot.
Do you?
I do. Because we do have so many children and each child has their own set of issues.
Mm-hmm.
They're all different ages and you find that in different stages, there are different problems. So, you know, London might be upset that at swim camp, she didn't get to jump in the pool first, you know, but Logan might be dealing with a problem related to sports or, you know, not being able to start or starting and other kids being jealous that he's the first one off the bench. And then there's my daughter who may just be involved with boys at this stage in her life or, more importantly, friendship issues at the age of 15 and dealing with the fact that she doesn't care about being popular. Meanwhile, being popular is such a big thing. And girls at this age are horrible. Teenage girls are some of the worst human beings, honestly.
I remember being one.
Yes.
Yeah.
You know, because there's a lot of competition, there's a lot of jealousy, boys play a factor, and I think that at this age, girls are very selfish, and they're into like self-promotion, what's best for me, me, me. You don't see teenage girls often with a large capacity for compassion and empathy and caring for other people, and I've seen that with my child. And on top of that, they're nasty. They don't know how to deal with other human beings or get their point across without mm-hmm. being rude mm-hmm. or vile. So that's a set of problems I have to deal with my daughter. But as the problems come in, I hyper-focus.
Okay.
Because with my daughter, her friends may not know, but she's not the one texting on the other end of the phone. They're talking to her mother. Like, really? Oh, so is that what you think of me? Well, this is what I think of you. And it's always, it's like... It's a nice way. It's a proactive way of dealing with negativity. I don't teach my children, like, you call me a bitch, I call you a bitch back.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't work like that. Like, if you call me a bitch, that means that there's something going on with you, that's how you're identifying me, and that's mm-hmm. the word that you're choosing. You're not telling me how you feel. You're not telling me how I offended you. You're just calling me out of my name to make me upset, and that's not productive.
So you just kind of deal with the problems as they come.
Yes, as each problem comes, I deal with it. But aside from problems, I make sure that I spend quality time with all of my children collectively and then each one individually. Like, there's days where London and Jackson, they're 3 and 4, they're joined at the hip. But I find the need to just take Jackson somewhere on certain days so he can just get my attention and that we can bond. And another day I might take Logan, another day I'll take London, another day I'll take Madison. And not really so much with the baby. The baby's always lumped in with everybody else. She just turned a year. But I do make time for each individual.
Now, I've got to ask. 5 kids. Mm. How on earth do you snap back after each child?
I really couldn't tell you.
Your body just naturally just...
It just does it.
That is amazing.
Yeah, yeah. Because I can't tell you that I eat well. I can't tell you that I exercise.
You have ice cream for breakfast.
Oh, yeah. I have ice cream for breakfast. Yeah, I mean... Hopefully one day it doesn't catch up with me. I don't know what the future holds, but for right now, you know, that's just what happens after I have a child, you know.
That is amazing. I have birthed 2.
Uh-huh.
And after the second one, it was like impossible to lose the weight. Yeah. I have to watch everything that I eat, be in the gym at least 5 days a week. If I eat a French fry, I'm busting about a button.
Yes. Yes. And I understand that because so many people around me, that's their health lifestyle. Mm-hmm. They watch what they eat. They're counting calories and watching carbs, not eating bread, rice, pasta, only having, you know, salads and whatnot. Mm-hmm. And even though that's not what I do, I'm mm-hmm. starting to consider it now for future health goals. You know, I want to make sure that I don't pigeonhole myself into an unhealthy lifestyle. So now I do want to kind of indulge in the F part of your MILF campaign.
In the fitness.
And yeah. Maybe now I will start to work out and maybe I will eat more healthy and consider my health and make it a priority in my life. So it's a change. I don't know how disciplined I can be and accomplish it, but it's something that I'm considering right now. Hey, disrespect, you are.